Rebic, Rafa, tira, gol! Rafael Leão, oggi segna Leão, la mia giornata è iniziata così.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrood.
You guys, glad to be back after, was it 1 week absence or was it two? I can't remember.
I think it was one.
One, yeah. Had a good time, went to Colorado, got away from the world for a bit. Also, my sister got married, so it wasn't like I just went on some retreat and there was a reason for it. But
like a spiritual awakening type thing.
Yeah, exactly. None of that.
Detox, get away from football. Not much happened while you were away.
No, it didn't look like anything. Yeah, no changes anywhere in the international scene, right?
No, everyone's got their head screwed on. Yep. It's good. Yeah, it's good. No, we shouldn't joke, really. I mean, it is a bit of a mess, the global situation at the moment. Yeah. Obviously, thoughts and prayers to everyone in Ukraine. It's pretty scary seeing the word nuclear up and down Twitter at the moment. It's genuinely nothing to laugh and joke about, so let's hope that that's resolved ASAP. But all I'm seeing at the moment is like Spartak Moscow have been booted out of the Europa League and no country wants to play Russia in any games. And it's like, wow, we're actually, after a pandemic, you know, this is where we're going. After two years where the world was turned on its head, we're going towards another civilization-defining moment. Doesn't seem great. At least we had some good football to distract us from it all on Friday.
Well, we had football.
We had football, yeah. It wasn't particularly good, was it? Obviously, last week we had to recap a 2-2 draw against Salernitana, and we were sort of saying this is the difference between the real ruthless title-winning sides, and we ended up getting away with it because while we were recording, Inter lost 2-0 at home to Sassuolo, and then Napoli went and drew on Monday night against Cagliari. I'm having Sunday, sorry. And it sort of felt like we'd got away with one there, and then we had another opportunity this week against Udinese to sort of set the tone for the weekend, shall we say, by playing first and hopefully getting 3 points on the board, beating what you may or may not call a bogey team for us, depending how far back you look at the statistics and stuff. We didn't do it. We fucked it again.
Yeah, I mean, that sums up pretty well. Early goal from Leao seems to be a trend, and then I don't know like what's going on. It seems like we're trying to play Allegri ball or something. Like we're scoring early, and then we just stop playing. Like we try to defend, but we don't do it well. And then we concede a goal, and then you know we semi push for another one, but really it's just the players putting on a show of how angry and like hurt they are about the referee. And I don't know. It always seems like it just seems like the performative response is always the world's against us, and not let's get the second goal, let's win this game. And you know that was the difference for Napoli this weekend, as I'm sure everyone's well aware. With 17 seconds left in stoppage time, they score a world-class winner, one of the best goals I've ever seen.
Lovely goal, yeah, lovely goal.
And that sent them top of the table because we couldn't get the job done against Udinese. I will say, and you know, Ollie might laugh at this, their goal was a handball. And the reason I say Ollie might laugh at this is because I was going in on how it wasn't a handball and we needed to suck it up and move on. And to be fair, I still haven't seen an angle where it looked like a clear handball to me. I haven't seen it. I've seen that video that's gone around, but it's like shaky camera recording.
360p.
Yeah, it's awful. It's worse quality than our podcast. So hopefully this looks improved. We just changed it. So, you know, maybe I said that all too early. But, it didn't look it to me. But then the comments from the guy who scored it, I already forgot his name, and their manager.
Udogi,
It all was very Buffon Muntari-esque, you know. It was all just dodgy comments. So I'm now in the belief that we were robbed yet again. And, you know, looking back on it, between the Salernitana game, which I don't think we were robbed, we just kind of fumbled the bag. But against 20th, you should be winning that. You give us those 2 points, the two extra points that we dropped here against Udinese, and the 3 points we were robbed of against Spezia, and we're seven clear at the top. And it doesn't matter that Napoli pulled off a comeback. You know, it doesn't matter that Inter have a game in hand. It doesn't matter that we play Napoli on Sunday. Like, none of that should matter because our performances should have been enough, and they weren't. And that's why we're now in this four horse race for the Scudetto that used to be two, that then became three, that is now four. And it's like the only ones who are really suffering here are, well, I shouldn't say the only ones, but we're all dropping points where we shouldn't be, and it's making for great neutral entertainment. You know, if you're just a fan of football, you're loving every second of Serie A this season. But I'm not a neutral. Ollie, I don't think you're a neutral, and I would imagine most of our viewers are not neutrals. So this kind of sucks for us, but
yeah, not a neutral yet. Yeah. I'm heading that way. Too much emotional investment is not good because it ruins the entire weekend, you know, when we, as you say, fumble the bag on a Friday night. So there seems to be a split narrative at the moment. And I think we've talked about this before because there was obviously the Spezia game that you alluded to. There was the handball in the Atletico Madrid Champions League game. There was the Napoli offside, you know, with Giroud when he was laying on the floor. There's a strong argument that this has now been the fourth or fifth refereeing decision that has directly led to the influence of the outcome of the game. And the narrative seems to be split between those people who are saying, what the hell can we do when the incompetent officiating and VAR crew can't pick up something like that? We should have won the game 1-0. And the people who are combating that by saying our performance wasn't good enough to deserve to win. We messed it up of our own accord. You know, the images maybe don't prove as much. It's tough. I mean, we're not exactly the best fan base in the world for reacting to a result that we're not happy with, are we? This one in particular seems to have stoked the flames a little bit. And then thankfully Inter decided to calm us all down a little bit by proving that they're in a little bit of a mini rut as well. Mm-hmm. They weren't exactly... They had their moments in that game against Genoa, but overall Genoa put in a good performance and they could have won it themselves as well.
Since 2018, Inter have outscored Genoa 25-0. So the fact that this game ended 0-0... is very impressive. That stat came from Missouri fan Phil, so everyone just yell at me there, but it is a true stat. I looked it up and I was like, damn, okay.
So. No, that is a good stat. I think it just goes to show that nobody is immune to it. I mean, we've spoken about how Inter are kind of this unstoppable machine. That seems to have gone away in the last few games a little bit. And obviously, tomorrow's game, we're recording this on Monday, tomorrow's game is the Coppa Italia semi-final first leg, and that will be like the battle between what seems like two wounded beasts at the moment, two teams that just cannot get the results that they should be getting for love nor money. But yeah, the Udinese game, where did it go wrong? I mean, it's hard to pinpoint any one player and say that, you know, they were the problem in terms of why the intensity, the performance wasn't there. What I personally think is that Pioli perhaps told the team, or I don't know if you can tell the team to do this, but his idea was to win this game with minimal effort and minimal expenditure of energy, given that
we had three guys going into a suspension for Napoli. So it definitely was the game plan. You know, Teo wasn't very physically aggressive, which is obviously by command because he always is. And if he was, he would have got a card and he would have been missing for Napoli, which is not acceptable. So I do think the game plan was said minimal energy expenditure, like you said. And I think the objective was to win 1-0. So that's why, like, just to go back a little bit to, you know, the two camps, we were either screwed by the ref or we weren't good enough to win it. You know, 1-0 is still a win. That's still a victory. There's a lot of teams whose entire identities are playing 1-0, you know.
I mean, who moaned after the Sampdoria game? We all said professional job well done. They barely had a chance.
Right, exactly. The narrative only changes when the result changes, you know. So it's a risky strategy playing 1-0, and obviously you go for the second goal if you have the opportunity, but I don't think that ever crossed our mind because we did have the opportunity on a couple occasions and we didn't really like look that pressed for it. You know, normally when a chance goes wide or something, when you miss it, there's hands thrown up. There's like, ah, bummer. You didn't see any of that. You know, it was just more like, well, we're still winning, you know? And I think that ended up biting them. It was a strange goal that we conceded because no one was particularly bad on the play, but no one was particularly good either. You know, it just was kind of like they were caught off guard. Like they just didn't expect it, which is weird seeing as this is now the third consecutive 1-1 game against Udinese in the league. So you'd think that they would be fully expecting that. And I would have said, you know, Teo, don't get a card, but let's push for this. You know, everyone play as hard as you can. And if we're down Romagnoli, so be it. We have another guy that we could bring in later. We got Clue, who's been great. We got Gabia, who I think's back. We got Tomori, who's healthy again. Like we have options there. Teo's really the only one that isn't, and you can't be replaced at the moment. So yeah. I don't know. I would have pushed a lot harder for it. And you look at the rest of the results this week. I mean, we could be sitting in third place right now if Inter didn't fumble as well. So, and we could still be sitting in first place if that Napoli game ended 13 seconds sooner, but, you know.
Yeah. No, it's, as you say, it's fantastic viewing for the neutral, no doubt. It's frustrating. I mean, we've now dropped double digits in terms of points to teams that are in the bottom half of the table, and that is not good enough. It was mentioned last week about the record that we have compared to Inter in terms of picking up points against the teams that are from 8th down to 20th. It's not good enough. Why we seem to struggle against what you would call the lower ranking sides, I can only keep putting down to the fact that we struggle to score goals as fluidly. We've seen Udinese time after time come to San Siro and play the same way. They've seemed to always have played a 3-5-2, but it's now like a 5-3-2, which is like a 5-4-1 at times on Friday. And they sit compact and they block and they force us wide, and we couldn't do anything with a static performance from Giroud. And unfortunately, Brahim Diaz is just not on the money at the moment. He just doesn't look sharp, and there was not as much space between the lines for him to work in, and we're starting to see that now. It's very easy to mark him out of games, especially if you're a team that sits low anyway. We found an answer to it with a bit of individual quality, I would say. It was a nice ball in, a well-timed run by Liao, who did well to sort of leverage himself off Becao and finished very nicely. And that's why you think, okay, we've got our goal. We can manage this game now. You know, we can, not saying time waste and all that kind of stuff, but we can be crafty with our substitutions. Mm-hmm. All that passing around that we were doing leading up to the first goal, that's absolutely fine because the pressure was on them to come back into the game. But I thought the second half was really poor. They were the better side in the second half, and that's what worries me. It was like we'd run out of energy. When we needed to turn it on after they equalised, there was no moment of quality after that. Same against Salernitana. When we equalised and you thought we're going to really go for the winner here, I thought we could win still 3-2, 4-2, like that Bologna game that we had earlier in the season.
Yeah, It was like 79 minutes played, something like that. It was towards the very end of the game. And we had the ball about halfway. And I watched, I believe it was Teo and Romagnoli, just pass the ball back and forth to each other about six times. And I'm like, are we doing anything? Like, are we just trying to pad our passing stats? Like, are we playing for the win? You know, there's 10 minutes, a lot could happen, but also there's 10 minutes. Let's make something happen. And they're just, you know, passing back and forth to each other, which, you know, you could argue all day about the significance of that or not, but I don't know. It didn't seem like there was any motivation or drive to go forward. You can't drop points to bottom five teams 2 weeks in a row. That's unacceptable for any team at all is going to complain about that. And when you're fighting for the Scudetto, when you're on top for what is it, 4 weeks straight now or something like that, like you gotta push for those are the games you have to win. You cannot drop any points to a 20th place team. You gotta take all six. And you know, people look at me and say, well, last time we dropped or we drew two games to Udinese or whomever, like 15th, whatever it was, was the year we won the Scudetto. But that's not how the real world works. You know, it's nice to say history repeats itself, but that's not how life
it's
goes.
It's a peculiarity, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's necessarily
a great coincidence,
mean
anything. If anything. But yeah, you got to get those points, you know, and you look at the last decade of Juventus domination. They had maybe Napoli as competition in 2-3 seasons. I think there was the one where Napoli broke the points record, but then Juve broke it further. That's probably the only season they had any real competition, and they still picked up as many points as possible to win it. You know, now that Juve isn't as good, and there's other teams that's good, it's a lot harder to be that dominant force because the league's so much better, and you can't be dropping these small points. You know, you got to do what Juventus did when they were dominating, which is dominate. That's how you win titles. I don't know. I feel like I'm just talking in circles at this point, but
momentum,
I'm so frustrated.
Momentum, mate. That's the big thing. It's okay starting off a winning run by beating Inter to throw the title race totally back up in the air, to then hammer Lazio 4-0 at home, to then keep another clean sheet by beating Sampdoria at home, and to then be in first place. Fantastic way to get some some momentum going into a crucial part of the season, because then you're looking, and this is where it goes to show nothing is won on paper. You're looking at the fixtures thinking things get a little bit easier for us there, a couple of games where we can manage our energy, we can rotate, and then we've got Inter and Napoli, and that's where. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, obviously, one of the big things this season, one of the big talking points has been the idea that in the second half of the season, we've got a bit of a competitive advantage because we should only be playing once a week most of the time. Now we're out of Europe entirely. I think we look out of rhythm. It's almost as if we could do with playing more,
yeah,
you know, just to try and get a bit of something going again, because the usual speed, the usual intensity, the usual aggression has not been there. You know, we're more well rested than we were in the first half of the season when we were playing more. We had spells where we're playing like three games in 8 days and stuff like that. If you look, we were regularly covering 110 kilometers plus in total combined as a team. We had 103 on Friday night against Udinese, and that was after almost a week of rest. There's some worrying sort of drop-offs from that point of view. I'm not saying that you only need to outrun an opponent to win, because we know that it's not as simple as that. But yeah, it just doesn't seem to be clicking in the same way. This blitzkrieg pressing, swift vertical counter-attacking football has not been there. We seem quite slow and ponderous, and we're relying on individual efforts more so than the cohesion of the team. I'm worried. I'm a bit worried about that.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think any professional athlete at this level should be able to play twice a week at minimum. So I don't know if I subscribe to the idea that you're better if you can focus just on the league. I think that makes the job easier for the manager, because they could, you know, study and game plan for longer time than their opposition in some cases, not all. In fact, not even most. Most teams are playing once a week. You know, it's not like Champions League is every single week. There's Coppa Italia every single week. Like, it's not the case. And then you get weeks like this where we play the top two teams in the league outside of us in what, a 5 day span. You know, like, so it still happens. But we should be able to play multiple games a week and be fine, just like we should be able to play one game a week and be fine. And the only downside to playing the one game a week is, You don't have the minutes, maybe, like you said. You know, that's the only thing I can think of, but I don't know. It's all strange.
So only then, no. I mean, I've noticed some journalists and pundits questioning the recent trend of giving the players like the first 2 days of the week off.
Stop doing it. Stop.
Yeah, to rest up. I mean, we had the whole problem in the first half of the season and prior to that in last season where players were coming in on rest days. And everyone said it's a sign of collective unity and that they're all willing to go above and beyond to win something. And I'm not entirely sure that was particularly helpful, but now it's kind of gone the other way to being where the team might be struggling just to click because they're not putting in as much work and the schedule is not as demanding. But that's it, man. We're making it very hard for ourselves. Very hard. Where do you feel this season goes from, before we do tops and flops and then we'll move on, but where do you see this season going from now? Are we still in the top two favourites for the title, or is it like Napoli v Inter now, and are we going to get dumped out of the cup, and is the whole narrative going to be that we can't take that final step with Pioli in charge?
So the way I look at it is, in this exact moment on today, Monday, February 28th, probably looking at third, simply because Napoli have the head-to-head advantage. That's why they jumped us, and Inter have a game in hand. That game in hand is a lot more important than people think, because it's, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. They might lose, they might draw, but that is an opportunity at 3 points that no one can get back on them. You know, everyone else has already played that round. So Inter know where they're at, where they could be, and there's nothing we could do about it. So yes, I do think Inter are still favorites at this exact moment. That said, you know, we play Napoli Sunday. Say we beat them. Now that's a 6-point game. You know, that also eliminates their head-to-head advantage. It goes to a goal difference, which is still them, but, you know, plenty of season left. And then from there, we enter probably our easiest 5-game stretch of the remainder of the season, whereas they enter their toughest stretch. So that could flip it all in their head. You know, who knows what's going to happen with them? Who knows what's going to happen with us? But I think that plays into it. So if we go 5 more match weeks successfully, I think we're in very good shape. I don't know off the top of my head what Inter's fixtures are, nor do I know Juventus, but I know that, those two teams have to play each other. So at one point, there's going to be another top four side that's dropping points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know, there's still a lot of what ifs going on to this season. I don't think we're dropping out of top four at any time soon. I think that would need a three-game slide from us. Our final five games are difficult, but they're not the hardest, and one of them is Atalanta still, I believe. Yeah. Second to last game, late May.
Yeah, last home game.
I think May 20th. So that would be good because that's against fifth place, depending on where they're at. You know, that's the buffer to save us from fourth or whatever, if it gets to that situation. But I don't think it will. I think we'll still be up top. I mean, look, we finished second last season with a worse team, in my opinion. I don't think the competition's changed that much. You know, Inter's just not as good, which is probably giving points to other teams, making it a little closer to the table. But overall, I think we're definitely top four. Do I think Scudetto favorites? I never did. But I think we have a chance, and it could happen. We just got to get our shit together.
We do. We do need to get our shit together. Tough one, isn't it? Because I feel like the general expectation is throughout the course of a season, by the back end of February, kind of know, or well, going into March, it's March tomorrow, bloody hell. You kind of know where you're going to be at. You know what you're fighting for. And we're still at this crossroads where, you know, we always keep saying the next game's the defining one. The one after that is the big, you know, it keeps going. It is fun. It is fun. It's nice to still be in for something. I remember those years, 2014 through to like 2018, when it was just whether we could scrape sixth place.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't particularly fun, was it? So it's nice, but yeah, they do quickly need to get things back together. The one thing that I will say about this team under Pioli is they have generally provided answers when they've needed them, and it tends to come in big games as well. So it'd be interesting to see if that rings true on Tuesday night and then on Sunday. Because Tuesday night, I mean, we saw what the Cup Derby did last season. It was huge. It was potentially a turning point in the title race, looking back at it with that last-minute winner from Eriksen. And could be the same thing. And then having momentum going into that game on Sunday would be massive. And then Inter have got Salernitana at home on Friday night.
I don't think that'll be hard for them.
I don't either. So, yeah, we can't rely on anything there. And they'll be looking at the game between us two on Sunday night and rubbing their hands, thinking, you know, any results good in that particular mm-hmm. game. We'll see.
And we have to rest a lot more in this game than they do. They have no incentive to take it easy. You know, like I said, Salernitana, they could play their second string and still probably do a number on them. And it's just frustrating that we didn't, because we should have. But here we are. Tops and flops.
Tops and flops. Flop Brahim Diaz. I'm starting to sound like a bit of a stuck record with this, but the number 10 position is so pivotal in the way that Pioli wants to play. As we know, we've talked about this to death over the last few months, that he cannot afford to be anonymous in games, especially against teams that we know are going to sit deep and try and frustrate. That number 10 player, in addition with one of the two, ideally both of the wingers, they need to be the ones that pick the lock. They need to be the ones that move smart, that play that killer ball, that shoot when the moment's right, that create space for Giroud, who was always going to find it tough against three centre-backs, that bring the wingers into play, that allow the midfielders to push up. Brahim was not there. He just wasn't. He looks like he's so low on confidence at the moment, and that's a real shame because he did really well when he came on in the derby, and he was good in that Cup 4-0 demolition of Lazio. Since then, he's kind of dropped off again. And as I say, we can't afford for him to be anonymous. And it doesn't surprise me that it sounds like Krunic is going to start the derby tomorrow, because we need somebody with a bit more physicality and a bit more presence against teams that play three centre-backs and three midfielders. So I'll go with him as my flop, and then let me think of a top while you say yours.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we're doing the Krunic thing, because, you know, we gave that exact same reasoning for starting Kessie in the last time we played Inter, and it was a disaster. And I don't think, you know, Brahim's an interesting one, but I don't think he was the flop. I think he wasn't that bad in the first half. I know he got a lot of stick on Twitter, but I thought he was doing really well between the lines and was opening stuff up, drawing fouls, which has been our number one criticism for a while. I thought he was doing actually pretty decent. And then the second half, it just was like reading the book in reverse. You know, it's just all, it didn't make any sense at that point. And then he got subbed off. But my flop, and I will get heat for this one, but I thought Tonali was awful. You know, he had an assist. It wasn't a good cross. It would have been beat, but Liao's strong enough to muscle the guy off him and create his own space. But besides that, he was awful, awful. Every counter in the first half was caused by a Tonali giveaway. Every single one. He was passing balls too short, too far, behind the players, in front of him. He just could not connect anyone. He couldn't keep hold of the ball. The only good completed pass was the assist, and it was luck that he got it. So my flop, definitely Tonali. I didn't think it improved at all in the second half. I think Tonali was bad.
No, it's a good shout. And it was mentioned last week how sometimes we might be guilty of expecting 7 out of 10s every week from Sandro Tonali, which it's hard to have that level of expectation on a 21-year-old. I mean, you saw the headlines during the week about him being future captain material and stuff. It's a lot of pressure to put on a young lad's shoulders, and he's become the leader of the midfield. So we do expect top-level performances from him, in particular in these games where I think he can be the difference maker. As you say, he got the assist with what was more of like a hopeful stab over the back, rather than anything amazing vision-wise. But he will get the assist for that one. But yeah, it certainly wasn't his best game. I just thought our game management in general in the second half was terrible. We could not keep hold of the ball, and they were well on top. I thought the goal was coming, to be honest. They had a string of set pieces, and it always looked like we weren't really dealing with them particularly well. They started growing in confidence. It was like watching the Salernitana game again, where instead of just controlling it, just taking the sting out of things a little bit, maybe making a sub or two, it was just a matter
Tonali
of time.
Was Tonali the third player on a suspension, or was it Benacer?
It was Romagnoli, Leteo, and Brahim.
Oh, and Brahim, that's who it was. Okay. Yeah, and he probably would have got a card because he was, like you said, not playing too hot, but I don't know. I thought Brahim drew a lot of fouls, so maybe he would have been.
No, I do agree with that. He did draw fouls in the first half. He looked, at least he
I
was
thought
doing something.
Bringing Maldini on was a mistake.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't
with that.
Think he's at that level to make a difference against any team.
We keep throwing him into these situations where I feel like it's impossible for him to succeed because it's like, obviously he's young and he's inexperienced and stuff, but what about that game up until that point made Pioli think that Maldini would be able to do something that Brahim wasn't? You know, I know they're different types of players, but it was clear to see that there was no space in and around the edge of the box.
Krunic would have been a better option at that point.
Probably going a 4-4-2 or something would have been the thing to do just to get a bit more presence in the box and sort of play Rebic alongside Giroud, kind of as we did against Salernitana. But Giroud's another one who looked isolated and flat-footed, and he just wasn't there. But he's been working
overtime.
So
did Rebic, man. Rebic was awful. When he came on, he had no interest. Like, you're used to seeing Rebic running around like a headless chicken, and we make fun of him for that. He did not move this game. He stayed planted on the edge of the box, whether we had the ball or not. He didn't move. He didn't try to make space. Maybe he was my flop, and he only played like 20 minutes. But yeah,
you
I thought
got
he was
wonder
really
if
bad.
that was by instruction rather than, you know, whether he was told to play as an actual centre forward rather than to do his usual thing of stretching the space and running out wide and causing confusion. Because you're right, he did look incredibly static. Probably just not at the races still after what was like over 2 month layoff, you know. It can be tough to hit the ground running, but I thought after that goal against Salernitana, he'd gain a bit of confidence. It's not happened so far, is it? I think he needs to start, to be honest. Like, he needs to get into the rhythm of the game from minute one.
Yeah, and I think the same thing with Danny Maldini. If he's going to play, it needs to be from minute one, like Spezia when he scored the winner. You can't bring him on in these high-intensity, high-risk, high-reward situations and expect him to do anything. You know, he's still a kid. So if you're going to play him from the beginning so that the tempo could be set with him and he could adjust to the game in the moment, not a split second, you know.
Funnily enough, that Spezia game, it was Brahim who scored the winner, and that's his last game for us, last goal for us, September 25th.
I thought Maldini's. Oh, no, it was a 2-1.
Maldini started
and
got
the
first with a header, and then that's Brahim scored later on, and that's his last goal for us. Crazy. Top of the game, I mean, it's Rafa.
It has to be, yeah. There's really no other option.
Are we at risk of becoming over-reliant on him?
We already are.
As a result?
We already are.
Yeah.
You see Rafa get shut down, we score nothing. You know, it's just, that's it. We need a striker, and I know Giroud's obviously been in decent form, but he's not the guy, you know. And neither is Latin. We need someone who could run around, be mobile, and obviously that's just not our system. If Rebic was given those instructions to play as a center forward, and you know that was his interpretation of it, then we have bigger problems. But we need someone that's going to move, maybe play a false nine instead or something. But yeah, right now we're Rafa Leão and friends. It's not good enough.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, not great. We move on. Let's do the Inter preview then. So we played them fairly recently in the league, so we know where they're at. They've kind of, I won't say fallen off the wagon, but they seem to have matched us in terms of disappointing results over the last few weeks. That derby win that we had seems to have knocked the stuffing out of them a little bit. They've had good performances in games. Like, I actually thought they were quite good against Liverpool in the Champions League. They had a couple of good 15-minute spells in that game, let's say, where Liverpool actually looked rocked. But then, like us, they just couldn't find a way to get the result against a team that has that much quality at the other end of the pitch. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's a test of Inzaghi's resilience at this point, because he's known, aside from a cup win or two, has been the nearly man. You know, he never seems to get his teams over the line. But
that's a common trend between the top three sides right now, is serial almost winners, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Juve's league.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know how to feel about this one at all. It's two teams that are probably running a bit low on confidence, running low on energy. Arrigo Sacchi said some interesting stuff in a column for Gazzetta, and I agree with it, where he basically said both teams, they're lacking the confidence that they had before to go out and think that they can outscore anybody. They're showing nerves, you know, even though this Inter team won the league last season, you've got players in there. You swap in Lukaku for Dzeko. Dzeko's not really won anything since he's been in Italy. And obviously you lose Hakimi, and you throw in, these are players that that have been replaced by players that haven't won. And then you've got Inzaghi, and he doesn't quite carry the same reputation as Conte. It's that simple. So this is a big test of where they're at. And it's a big test for us as well, for the exact same reason. We need to respond after some poor performances. And this might be the right game to do it, because at least we're going to come up against a team that's going to try and attack us, and we'll leave space in behind. And it gives us a chance to play against someone else who wants to play, you know? I'm not confident of winning, though. I don't know about you.
Yeah, unfortunately, this one can't go to extra time. It's leg one, so that's good. I mean, honestly, no one's going to like to hear this, but just hold out for a draw. Just same game plan against Udinese that failed. Do that against a much better side and hope for the best. Like, yeah. I obviously, you never want to lose to Inter. It's a derby. It's a semi. I wanted us to lose against Genoa so that we didn't have to play this damn game. I wanted to just have a focus on Napoli, but maybe this is what we need. Maybe we need a big game between it to, you know, get the boots moving again, you know, keep the stress of the league off our mind and have this little distraction to move forward. But I don't know. This is a tough one. Inter is a lot weaker than they were last season. You know, I don't remember off the top of my head what the point total was, but I think they were close to 75, I'm going to guess, points at this point at the season last year. They ended up with like 90 something, and we were second with 79. So there was a big gap, and now there's obviously no gap. So, they've gotten weaker, and that's not to say that the people they brought in, Inzaghi's a great coach, Dzeko's a great player, Dumfries is a great player, Hakan sucks, but everyone they brought in is just a like-for-like downgrade of who they replaced, and that's empirical fact. You know, that's not an attack on Inter, it's just like, look, you guys got weaker. That's what happens when you have negative money and you have to sell off players so that you could have less negative money. But they're still a great team, and it's shown. Obviously, they're in second. They're a league favorite. Or no, they're in third. They're league favorite still, and it's going to be tough. But I think this is the game. Are we home? Well, there's no away goals for the cup, is there?
Yeah, there is away goals.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Ridiculously. Because, honestly, the away goals rule, they obviously got rid of it in Europe, but for some reason, like a Serie A, decided to keep applying it for the cup. And I think it just seems stupid when us two are playing each other in a semi-final. There is no real home and away.
Right. One team's going to have 10,000 more fans than the other. Yeah. Ooh, like, okay.
It's negligible. Now, obviously, you've got Juve Fiorentina as the other semi-final. So that's where home advantage.
You know what's going to happen. Relevant. It's going to be us against Fiorentina in the final, and then Piontek's going to score a stoppage time winner. That's imagine. Exactly what's going to happen.
I imagine.
But whatever. I'd rather Fiorentina get a trophy if it's not us than any of the other teams.
Yeah, I've started to think that way about Napoli. Like, if we're not going to win the league, it better be them. I'm with you on this. I wouldn't mind seeing us play for a draw.
Now, wait, are we home or are we away?
We're at home first, like.
Yeah.
So if we play for a 0-0 and they don't get an away goal, it's not the end of the world. It's a one-leg shootout then. Because the way that I think about it, this result is obviously, it's not ineffectual because it is a first leg and it has weight in, but the return leg's not for 6 weeks. Like, we'll have forgotten about it by the time it comes around. It's almost ridiculous. So if this game's a draw, then you can almost treat that one in 6 weeks' time as like a one-off, you know. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think both teams would be that disgusted with a draw because it's a demanding part of the fixture schedule, obviously, and I think both teams would prefer it if it were a one-legged affair at this point, to be honest.
Yeah, if we could keep this 0-0, the second leg is massively in our favor because at that point, all we need is a draw to win.
And also, we do tend to have the edge over them in two-legged games. You know, Champions League, we beat them 2 times out of 2. And we'll see. I mean, I guess all we can do is starting lineup, I suppose we should mention. It's going to be Kessié Benacer in the midfield because Tonali is suspended for this game. I guess the back four picks itself still. I don't see any reason to change anyone there. There are some whispers about Florenzi potentially coming in for Calabria, but I wouldn't do that. I would keep the back four as it is and hope that the chemistry sort of remains there. But you can also make an argument for making a change and trying to sort of instill a different way of getting a clean sheet, because it's whatever we're doing at the moment doesn't seem to be keeping clean sheets, or at least in the last two games. And then the debate, I guess, is who starts at 10 and who starts on the right wing.
I'm keep it simple. Brahim and Macias. I think whether they're good options or not, they are our best options. So leave it be.
My worry with Krunic is that we're going to see the same thing as we did playing Kessié there, where we have an idea of what's going to happen in terms of trying to neutralize Brozovic, and it's just going to backfire, and he's going to be out of the game completely. That would be my worry, because if Kessié couldn't do anything, and obviously he's a unit, he's like a physical monster, then I'm not sure what Krunic is going to do, but we'll see. It might just be time to give Brahim a rest. Maybe he's just absolutely cooked, and that's why his performances have been a little bit awry. And then on the right, I would start Macias, because I think Salamakers is like impact sub material. That's about where we're at with it. And Macias is a goal threat, you know?
Yeah.
He is more of a goal threat. So if we get sort of half chances and stuff, I'd rather they fall to him. I think the team does pick itself. Sounds like Inter are going to be lining up with their strongest 11, or at least according to this morning's paper. Handanovic in net, Skriniar, De Vrij, Bastoni, Dumfries at right wing back. And then you've got Barella, Brozovic, Calhanoglu, Perisic left wing back, Lautaro, Dzeko. Keep Lautaro and Dzeko quiet, keep a clean sheet, and let's hope. Prediction?
I'm going to go 1-0 Milan. I know I just gave Inter all this respect for the last like 15, 20 minutes here, but in their last two games, the combination of Lautaro and Dzeko have had 50 shots and 0 goals, and they've been pretty bad teams. So if they keep that up, then we're fine. You know, we're good. I think the interesting battle is going to be Teo and Dumfries. They obviously had quite a bit of back and forth in the last encounter, so I think that's the one to watch. But I think ultimately we're gonna get the job done. I think it'll be right before halftime, maybe extra stoppage time of the first half. I think we all get a goal.
Everything I've just said about how both teams would probably sign up for a draw right now, and it could be a tight, cagey affair between two teams low on confidence. I'm not great at predicting stuff, so I'm going to go the exact opposite to that and say that both teams are going to see this as a bit of a free shot, and both defences that have, you know, struggled a little bit are going to show a few more cracks. So I'll go 2-2, which wouldn't be great for us because obviously two away goals, but still, you know, you don't know. Yeah. Napoli.
Yay.
My bad. Another tough one then. Napoli won't go away this year.
It's very frustrating. Very, very frustrating.
I have to give him a bit of credit. I mean, Spalletti, obviously, since he was at Inter, I don't have much time for him. I was really annoyed about how he missed out on that sort of Champions League space on the last day, Champions League spot when we had Gattuso. Spalletti since, I've just sort of been like, oh. Ever since he was going to be our manager and then wasn't, I just haven't taken to the guy. I also think he looks a bit dodgy, you know, with the facial hair and the cue ball head. But he's doing a good job.
Yeah, who would do that?
He's doing a good job. You can't really knock him. He's got them firing. This is going to be really hard because they're going to be well up for it. They'll see an opportunity to put daylight between us and them. Obviously, we need to win to get back the head-to-head, but I don't think it's the end of the world if we don't. If we deserve to win the Scudetto, we'll pick up at least 1 point more than Napoli in the running, you know. So I don't think we can play for the idea that we'll be level on points with Napoli. As weird as that sounds, it'd be nice to get some revenge for the first game of the season where, you know, the result was quite frankly wrong. It should have been a 1-1 draw in that game. This is going to be tough because they're going to be well up for it, Napoli, after the last-minute winner at Lazio that they got yesterday, and also they don't have Cup to worry about in midweek, so they're going to be better rested for it as well.
This is the hardest game we have left. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. I think we all kind of know that. You just look at their team. Elmas is an incredible player who doesn't get the credit he deserves. Every time I watch Napoli, the two players, I'm like, all right, these are the guys. Elmas and Adamunas. I think both of them are just incredible, and they're going to be problems for a long time. Lazio's not a good team, but Lazio has historically been really close in caliber with Napoli. They've been fairly close to rivals, obviously Roma being their main one, but Napoli is right there with them. Napoli's a lot better team now, but still that historical rivalry. When you get a win like that with 17 seconds left in the game against a team that big as far as your opponent goes, and the way it played out with them having just scored an equalizer not too long before that everyone thought like that's the game, you know, you're going to feel like you could do anything. And then they see us in second. They have the head-to-head advantage. They know we're wounded, that we're dropping points left and right. They're going to see this as their opportunity to win the Scudetto. That's what they need to do. So this is going to be the hardest game for us. They're going to go out and play. And if we're not perfect, they're going to win. Like that's just the way it is. You can say we were hard done to not get the draw last time, but it doesn't really matter at this point. We have to win. That's our only option. And I mean, that's it. I don't have any like in-depth tactical thing. I just got emotion. Like we have to win. We have to.
Well, the season at this point, or from this point onwards, it does kind of run off emotion, doesn't it? Like that we're not at the point where you can look deep into performances in particular. The only currency is wins. And if you get 3 points, it doesn't matter how you got them, because nerves and tension do funny things to the best teams. I mean, look at Man City. I don't want to just randomly look at the Premier League here, but they were running away with the league. And now all of a sudden they've got Liverpool breathing down their necks. And that is potentially the best team in Europe at the moment.
Do they really?
I thought
they had like a clean gap on them.
If Liverpool win their game in hand, it'll be 3 points. It just goes to show, doesn't it, that the best teams can fumble under pressure. Obviously, they've got other targets that they're fighting for as well. So for us, it is a chance to go out and make a statement at what is potentially the most sort of hostile opposing stadium to play in mm-hmm. Serie A, and against a team that are going to be fired up for it and still have plenty of quality. You know, if, for example, we know that Kessie's leaving and his performances have not been up to par all season, they've got Insigne, who's still putting in, you know, performances yeah. that influence the match. And he's going to Canada
Toronto,
at the end of the season. So Spalletti's done a really good job of getting them all together, united for the cause. I thought that they would drop points against Lazio because of the manner that they lost to Barcelona. I think that they put a lot of energy into that Barcelona game, thinking we can make a real statement by winning this, and they got swept aside. Like, it wasn't really a contest after a good first leg result as well. But for them to bounce back with that result and the manner that they won it, it just makes me fear that they're going to utilise the extra rest that they have. And obviously the home advantage that comes with playing there. And I think a draw is the best outcome for us here. I wouldn't say no to a draw at this point. I know what you're saying about it being a must win. And if we did win it, then everybody would be believing again. But as I say, it's almost like a must not lose for me. Because if we lose this, we're in deep, deep shit.
I would argue we already are, with them having the head-to-head. If we don't win this, then, you know, regardless of, like, we need one more point. You know, we need an extra point over them at some point. Mm. And they might have a harder five-game stretch immediately hereafter, but we end the season with the hard five-game stretch. Yeah, so we got to capitalize, and they got to fumble a lot if we don't win this game. You know, we got to hope for a one-out-of-a-million scenario here. So I think we got to get this win. This is the only way.
I'm just going to look at the Napoli team just to see what we're facing off against and the kind of formation that they're playing. So they seem to be doing a 4-2-3-1 like us, which I like, because if we can match up with a team systematically, then it just makes me feel that bit more comfortable. But Di Lorenzo, I really like him. I think he's another underrated player. Romani Koulibaly have been solid. Mario Ruiz. I've seen Ospina make some fantastic saves this season. You know, for him to go to being like a laughing stock at Arsenal, he's done fantastically. Obviously, Fabian Ruiz is potentially the best register in the league. He's fantastic, along with like Brozovic, maybe. Even Politano, I think, would do a job for us, you know, as a right winger. Works incredibly hard and he's rapid. And then obviously you've got Zielinski, who is fantastic, one of the best number 10s in the league. Insigne and Osimhen. So they've got plenty of weapons to hurt us. What's the score going to be?
Well, and that's the thing, man. You look at that team, and I just think that they play with a chip on their shoulder because they're such a great team, but they're constantly being disrespected. You know, people just don't expect Napoli to be competing like the other teams, and I don't know why. They're absolutely one of the top teams, if not the top team. But as far as the score goes, this is going to be a barn burner. We're going to win 3-2.
That'd be class. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. KG 1-1 draw. I don't know why. I really can't justify it. As I say, at this point, the season's kind of functioning on raw emotion.
I think we're going up 2-0, and then we're going to concede 2, and then we're going to win it late. But emotions are going to be everywhere.
Twitter's going to be fun.
No, it won't. Regardless of the result. I will not be logging in.
Talking points, you were here last week. So basically, yeah, I've decided to do this so we can recap some of the main stories that have come out in the week. And there's not as many as there was last week, to be totally honest with you. But a couple that I just want to talk about. A couple of different sources have said today that we want Scamacca for next season. I think we've talked about this like last summer and stuff when we've been linked originally. But it does seem that there is a concrete interest in our part. Perhaps we know that Ibra's... maybe having doubts about his future. Not only that, but we know we need to make an investment in a centre forward at some point. And maybe we're not convinced by Belotti as a profile, and we've decided we're going to bring forward the investment in a striker to this summer. He's got 10 goals in 25 league games this season, would apparently cost in the region of 40 million. Are you sold?
I was until you said that price tag. I don't think he's worth that. I'd pay 28, 30, maybe most, but 40 is really steep. I am a big fan of him. You could Twitter advanced search me. I've brought his name up multiple times. I do think he's a good player. Hate his neck tattoos, but, you know, I won't hold that against him.
Yeah, they're really weird.
They are. And normally I think neck tattoos are actually like the coolest of all tattoos, but his just aren't good. They're like Ederson level bad, you know. But anyways, I digress. I think he's a good player and he would absolutely help us. And I bet you turn that 10 goals in 25 games or whatever it is. I bet in a team like ours, you're looking at 15, 20 goals in a season.
Oh, yeah, you've got to hope for more. I mean, he's only 23. That's the thing. And he's in and around the Italy squad. So there is pedigree there. And he drew attention for his loan spell at Genoa because he was scoring goals in a team where, you know, they didn't score many goals. With Sassuolo, they're a bit more free-flowing. They obviously play they play better football. They score plenty of goals. And I think it's benefiting him being part of that now. It just depends for me what we're going for. If we're going for kind of like a mobile target man type, then he's ideal. But if we were going for more of a Jonathan David false nine role, running in behind, that kind of thing, then those are the profiles that we should be going for. I'm almost tempted to like move away from the whole static centre forward type thing, because I think we're seeing with Ibra and Giroud up front, or we have done this season, that the players around them suffer because of it. And it would be nice to have a fully fluid attack that kind of interchanges. Also think the price tag, that's big. 40 million.
It's too much for
him. It's a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, that is the kind of money you would be paying for a Jonathan David, who is obviously a league winner with Lille and has a better goal.
Well, and he already has relations with half our team. So, I agree. Well, whatever. I do think that if we go static, then we have to get a better attacking mid, you know, because that's why we're failing, is there's no service to our striker because they stand still, and our attacking mid, who should be the one servicing him, just isn't getting the job done. So if we go Jonathan David, then Brahim's good enough. You know, they'll all be moving around. If we go Scamacca, then Brahim's not good enough. And then it's like, who is available that is? And I think that creates more questions than answers. So
funny, because we could go from like having, I don't know, I don't want to say short, because obviously Giroud's not short, but Brahim we know is, and then the two right wing options we have are, and say Yassine Adli comes into the fold and takes that number 10 role for next season, we'll have more size up front, like we'll have players going up to win headers.
I forgot Adli was coming in, to be honest with you. How tall is he? He's like 6'2", something like that.
He's pretty tall. He's pretty tall. So we'd have more size and physicality up front. And I think that that could potentially help us. We wouldn't be as passive in games against teams that park the bus. What was the other thing? The other thing was that the two clubs, Milan and Inter, are getting quite frustrated with the city council and how long it's taking over the stadium project. Obviously, we know there are logistical challenges with it anyway, in terms of building a new stadium next to the old stadium. So quite a lot of red tape that we've got to get through. And the clubs have pretty much confirmed that they're willing to start looking at alternative sites within the city. Do we still think that's a good idea?
I said it 10 years ago. I said it a year ago. I've said it 5 years ago. Every time that the stadium has been approved and brought up, I'll believe it when I see it. Tottenham was able to build one of the best stadiums on earth exactly where White Hart Lane existed. I mean, they had half of White Hart Lane up while the stadium was finished, you know, like it can get done, and yet it's not. And we have the backing of two teams versus just one. Obviously that one team in the Premier League is probably more valuable than both of us combined, but the point stands. Like there's ways to get this working, and bureaucracy in Italy just doesn't allow it to happen. And we're not moving away from that. We're moving towards it by still allowing the city to have a lot of say, a lot of ownership in it. And I don't know. So I'll believe it when ground is broken, wherever the hell it's at. We'll see what happens.
The worry is that the public interest debate, which is going to be launched, could take us into 2023. And if we haven't broken ground by then, because it's going to take a bit longer than a normal stadium on a wide open site to construct, that we might not be able to open it in 2026 or 27 when the teams want. I'm all for them putting pressure back on the council by saying we'll move outside the city district and we won't have all this shit to deal with.
Yeah, you know, and then they can keep San Siro up for the 2026 Olympics or World Cup or whatever it is. The
Winter Olympics.
Winter Olympics, yeah. Because I know that was a big thing before, and we were going to hold off to breaking ground till then anyways, which is just asinine. So, yeah, move the hell away. Start breaking ground. Hell, we'll leave Inter behind. Let them stay in San Siro, you know? Give us the new stadium. London has 16 stadiums in the city. Like, why can't Milan, who has two of the biggest teams on earth, have two stadiums?
Could do, yeah. Yeah.
It's big enough.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's other things to consider, like combining resources and what the capacity of two separate structures would be versus one. And we were going to follow through and build our own stadium under Berlusconi's time. We were going to build one in Portello. Don't know. I still think it's a pressure movement, and I still think that eventually it happens. But you're right. It's the bureaucracy. It's so frustrating. And there's and people wonder why Serie A has slipped so far behind as a league. In the Premier League, in the Bundesliga, no doubt in other leagues, they welcome investment to modernise the league, to bring in more revenue, to boost the reputation globally of the brands within it. For some reason in Italy, it's the opposite. It's like they're trying to put teams off moving into the future. And then they want to turn around and say, well, look at our TV rights deal. This is why we're so far behind.
Yeah.
Just give yourselves all the opportunity you can to have a more marketable product. And then you'll start to see the money coming in. It's that simple. It's pathetic that it's taking so long.
We saw on Twitter the last like 2 weeks, all the jokes going around about Napoli Stadium's toilets. Milan's are arguably worse. They are a hole in the ground. And
they're pretty bad.
That is consistent all over Italy, bar Juventus Stadium, because it's the only new one. Our stadiums are trash. The infrastructure's trash. Like, the country just doesn't.
The people running the league are backwards. Like, yeah. they're too busy protecting their own interests. The councils are backwards because a lot of them still own the stadiums within the cities and they get rent from that. Mm-hmm. So obviously the council will be thinking, oh, you know, we're going to lose out on this amount of money. But it's pathetic. It's getting ridiculous now. They need to resolve it one way or another. Otherwise, we're just going to be dragged along the ride. That's it for talking points. So we'll do a couple of questions and then wrap up. I'm doing a blind read of these, so you'll have to bear with me.
Best way to do it.
Yeah, it is. Hot takes. Karim asks, thoughts on our underdog mentality? Good thing or bad thing? Did Pioli instill this into us, or is it that we've got a bunch of young and unproven players, so they're automatically underdogs?
I don't like it. I don't think we should be considered underdogs. We were in first place or tied for first, nine-tenths of the season so far, so I don't think we should be calling ourselves underdogs. You know, we're definitely not favorites, but that doesn't mean we're the come from behind people either. Like, we are exactly where we should be. We're in second place, fighting for first, tied on first. We are winners. We're one of the biggest teams in the world. We're not underdogs.
I think we're going to be underdogs until we win something. People are going to say that we can't get over the final hurdle until we do it. I totally agree with you on reputation, on what we've achieved under Pioli so far over the last, you know, coming up to two seasons. People have given us a lot of praise, and we have been mentioned in the Scudetto race throughout, and nobody's written us off. Nobody's pre-written us off, let's say. The underdog thing is it only matters what the players think. If they think that they're underdogs, then they're going to probably play like it. And if that's an advantage to them, because they feel like they can play with more freedom, they can be more scrappy, they're doing it to fuel themselves against some kind of narrative, then fair play. But I would always rather the players play with confidence, not complacency, but confidence to think, yeah, we can win trophies here. I mentioned last week the interesting sort of split in the media from one result to the next, where if we get a good result against Inter, it's because we've got a young, hungry team that are playing with confidence, that have not really experienced failure before, so they're fearless. Whereas then when we drop points in back-to-back games, it's this team are too immature. They've got a lot of learning to do because they're too young. They're missing leadership. You know, that this is the same group of players that people talk about, and yet it's catastrophic when we drop points and all of a sudden the entire project comes into question. But yeah.
Yep.
Next one. Based on rumours, if Milan had to land one of them, who's the right choice, Scamacca or Jonathan David? Funnily enough, we just talked about that one. Jonathan David, I would say.
Yeah, especially at the price tag, they're both going to be 40 plus. David.
Brilliant. Josh, ACM1899 asks, which is a more accurate statement? Number one, Milan are a young squad on an upward trajectory and are overachieving based on their current budget and are still a work in progress. Or two, Milan are underachieving based on their current squad and abilities. One for me.
I don't think either of them are accurate.
It's probably somewhere in between.
Right where we should. I mean, look, we finished last season in second place. You could say we were underdogs last season, but you don't go from second place finish to second again and being under or overachieving. You're right where you were. Yeah, I think we're doing exactly the job we should have been expected to do, and whether that's a Scudetto or a runners up spot, we'll see. But I don't think we're playing above or beyond our means. I don't think we're struggling either.
We had our problems last season in terms of consistency, and our form in the second half of the season dropped off. Pioli said several times this season that the Scudetto is something that the players can dream of, but the main target is just to better our points total from last season. And I think that's a realistic target. If you want a marker of progress, then it would be that, because it shows.
Is that still possible for us? Where are we?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's like 30 some points to play, I think.
I mean, I think Allegri came out and said 84, 85 points is probably going to be the league winning total this year. And I think that's, I think if you're over 80 this season, you're looking pretty good.
There's 33 points left. That would put us at 90 if we collect them all. I don't think we're going to, but so maybe Allegri's right. I mean, the dude does no ball, so I put him to win my league at the beginning of the season, and slowly but surely, 7 points off the top. That's three games, and they're going to take points off Inter. We might take points off of Napoli. All of a sudden, 3 points off the top. 2 points off the top.
They've won it, haven't they? What a disgrace. in answer to that question, I think it's probably somewhere in between. I can't say that we're underachieving. But a trophy does become a realistic expectation at some point. That's just the natural evolution of a project. And I think next year is going to be shit or bust in that sense, especially if we invest in the summer like we're supposedly going to.
Would you think it'd be beneficial for us to win the Coppa Italia this season then? Say we win it,
yeah,
like,
I would
well,
love
we got
a
our
trophy.
Trophy.
Yeah, I would
but,
love a trophy.
But do you think it hinders how we perform next season, like how we invest? Like, we overachieved. We got a trophy. We did it. Okay, yay. Project over.
No, that's an interesting point. Like, is it good to always be striving for something rather than to have achieved?
I mean, eventually you have to win something. Like, no disrespect to Tottenham, but, like, look at them. You know, they've been – how long have they been this great project, 20 years?
Like, I think the league becomes a big priority next season. I really do. And also, there is an obvious yardstick for us, which is to get out of the groups in the Champions League. I think that would be be another sizable step forward. I'm already thinking of next season, thinking Juve have done their investment and they're going to be right up for it next season, you know, really.
Juve is the only team that made the correct changes in the winter window. No one else did anything, really.
Wait until Robin Gosens scores the winner tomorrow night.
God. is he playing yet?
His first game is going to be tomorrow night.
Lovely.
Although it doesn't sound like he's going to start, but I'd rather he start over Perisic, to be honest, because that guy's a nightmare.
I hope we get Perisic on a free.
Same. But that would be amazing. This is Rocky Award. Ollie often says we need to sign some players in the 27 to 29 year old range to bridge the gap between our young players and elders in the squad to provide some solidity and experience. If we can only sign one player that fits this profile, what position would you sign them for in the 4-2-3-1 and who? I know you're picking.
I'm going to pick?
I know you're picking, yeah. A certain 27 year old winger from Sassuolo.
Good shot. I didn't know who I was going to pick, but I think you had me pinned pretty well there. Well, no, you're exactly right. I mean, 27 to 29 is the prime of an athlete's career. I mean, I'm 28. I'd be the best striker we'd have on the team. So, it's me. Sign me. No, I think Berardi's great. He's on 20 goals and assists already this season. Right wing is a bogey spot for us. Obviously, I'm full ship ahead on Macias, but I won my bet already, so I don't care what happens to him anymore.
Vested interests removed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I got my ROI. Let's get Berardi in here.
Yeah. Now I've suggested that I'm struggling to come up with one myself. I mean, the obvious arguments, I suppose, are that we could do with kind of bridging the gap in the striker department by bringing in a Belotti who's 28. I know people have their own ideas on that one. I can't really think of anyone. I mean, the names that keep being floated are like Isco, who's 29. He might be 30 now, actually.
He's 30, yeah.
But if you're talking about an upgrade on the number 10 position and a player who's won stuff, he has experience of winning multiple Champions League trophies, league titles, that's someone who could come in and give an instant jump in terms of mentality. But I was more so speaking with that from a physical point of view. Like, it doesn't do much good to have several players who are well in their 30s and then a lot of players who are in their early 20s. I just don't think that that is a healthy balance. We keep talking about how we have the balance of youth and experience. There's nothing in between, apart from Romagnoli, really.
Yeah, who's
27.
The maturity difference is so massive when you're looking at, you know, grown-ass men with families versus up-and-coming teenagers and youngsters. And, like, granted, the mentality of an athlete is always going to be significantly more mature, so those 35-year-olds coming in are probably going to behave a lot more like a 28-year-old, but that means the 28-year-olds are going to act like a 23-year-old, and the 23-year-olds are acting like a 17-year-old. I mean, so you need a lot closer gap. You need more evenly spread out. And, you know, people love the youth project. They always think, oh, the youth is great. They're going to one day be so good. When is one day? When does that happen? You know, you can't rely on youth. Not every team is Ajax. Let's look at Ajax. They're always a young team. I think right now they're actually a little bit older, but when was the last time they won something? They've gotten close, but they haven't actually done the job. And that's just the reality of few teams. You're going to get lucky or you're not. And same with old teams. You're going to get lucky with some experienced players, or all of a sudden they're going to hit a hill and everyone's ACL is going out. You know, like, you need that healthy mixture. And the prime of your career is your late 20s, early 30s.
You think about Ajax's defining moment. It was when they couldn't hold a late lead against Spurs that would have sent them to the Champions League final.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. You can
and
make
what
a
was the average age of that Spurs team? I don't expect either of us to know off the top of our head, but no looking idea. At the players who were there, I guarantee it was 27 or 28.
Probably was. But yeah, I would like more players in their prime is the answer to that. Berardi's not, yeah, it's not a bad shout. I mean, my only reservation with him has been the alleged asking price, but if he really is going to push to leave this season, maybe we can try something. I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be tough.
What was the price?
40 mil.
Honestly, I'm not against it.
27, though.
But
he's got 4 years in him.
Yeah, that's 4 years. That's
if
one
that's
contract.
What we need, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
I mean, we signed Zlatan for 1 year, 3 seasons in a row. Like,
I just think that, like, Juve took the chance twice by completing big, big money deals. No, you can say three times, by signing players domestically in big money deals. Chiesa being the first one, who we were also in for. And I think in hindsight, we should have made a bit of an extra effort because he would have been our right wing sorted for the next time. I know he's out with an ACL, but you can never foresee something like that happening. He's still a generational talent. There's no two ways about it. Locatelli, they did it. They found a way, crafty accounting, to get that deal done. And obviously, they've got Vlahovic, who's the hottest property probably in the January transfer window. They seized those moments. You know, they seized those moments. And Berardi might be that type of opportunity, basically, to get a player who we know is going to be an instant upgrade. He's going to cost more. But we know he's going to score goals for us. And that could be the difference between us having a balanced attack and Leao getting completely neutralised next season. Final one. We got a shout out from Wally as well, which was very nice of him. Some kind of cat noise in there. But I don't know. He was lying about having a cat earlier in the week.
Okay.
Yeah. Swedish podcast asked, would you rest players in the Coppa Italia game and go for it in the league, you know, put everything into the title race, or do you play a full strength team?
I mean, who can you rest? Like, what are our options? Rebic maybe over Leao, but then
you'd have to have Maignan, Florenzi, Kalulu, in the back four somewhere, maybe alongside Romagnoli, because those two work together. Tomori's looked a little bit groggy since coming back from injury. Obviously, you can't rest Teo. The double pivot has to pick itself. You're not going to throw Bakayoko in for a game like that. And then you'd have to play like Salamakers from the start, Krunic, Liao, and then Rebic up front or something. I don't know. I really don't know what we can do. It's funny because the general idea has been that we're now over the worst of our injury crisis and we've got a whole wealth of options that we can call upon, but it doesn't feel like it.
We just don't have options, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, we are over the crisis, but look at the players who are still out. Kerr's not coming back. So our backup is... Yeah, no, he's gone.
Terminated his deal.
Our option now for backup is Kalulu, who luckily has been really good, but he's not a center back. You know, he's still a fullback, so there's that. You look at our striker position. Either a teenager in Lazatic, who still hasn't seen minutes, who we don't know anything about, or Giroud, who's 35 and has to play a full 90 week in, week out. Like, if anyone needs a rest, it's him. So do you start Rebic up top? But then you look at Liao. He needs a rest. He's played full 90s week in, week out. So what do you do? You know, we don't have many options. Mm. The places we do have options, we're not going to take advantage of them, like midfield, because like you said, Bakayoko's not coming in. Krunic isn't going to come in as a center mid. You know, there's the place that we have the options, we're not using them. Mm. Balotelli is not going to replace Teo. That's too important. So, yeah, it's frustrating. You know what subs are going to come each game because they're the only options. And it is what it is at this point of the season. You know who's going to do a job and who's not, and you can't make any exceptions at this point.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, that the squad is still very much a work in progress. We took gambles on certain players. Like, I can't say Florenzi has been bad. You know, I think if anything, he's been a good, solid loan signing.
I hope we actually make that official. I think he's done well.
Yeah, I think he would have earned it. But I also don't mind the idea of signing Mazrui if he's going to be a free and Florenzi's going to be 5 million. You know, there you would be getting younger in that position, and Mazrui has Champions League experience, and you know, I think wouldn't be a bad signing either. But then you're looking at like Macias, who to say he was injured for such a long time at the start of the season, to be on 5 goals now and to have scored a winner in a Champions League group stage game, you'd say he's doing pretty well. But then it's like Bakayoko, how much emphasis we put on that, on him being cover while AFCON was on, and it just hasn't happened for him, has it? And we don't trust Krunic playing deeper for obvious reasons. And Balotelli, again, just not reliable, especially for the top games. So it goes to show that there is certainly still pieces to change around until we consider the squad to be a bit more competitive. Yeah, that's it. Managed to get over an hour again. Sorry.
Oh, we had 3 games to talk about, so.
Yeah, but it's been a pleasure. Thank you if you made it this far. As always, hammer the like, subscribe, drop us a comment if you enjoyed it, and check out our Twitter. We've got a giveaway going at the moment with Art of Football to win a Milan T-shirt. The deadline for that is kickoff in the derby. So, yeah, it's on our pinned tweet. Subscribe to our newsletter on Substack if you haven't already. There'll be a link going out for that soon on Twitter, which you'll see. Check out our merchandise online.
And one thing we didn't mention somehow is Gian and Stefano are at the Derby. They're in Milano right now. So I think we'll have some on the scene content.
Yeah, we'll have some videos going live on social media and stuff tomorrow, live and direct kind of thing. And then we are hopefully going to edit together some of the best clips that they got into some kind of, I don't want to call it a vlog because that makes us seem hipster.
Very Logan Paul of us.
Yeah. But let's call it some kind of trip diary. That might be.
I don't know. That might be more sus. I don't know.
Yeah, it might be.
We'll figure it out. We'll call it something. And it'll be, you know, a 6 out of 10 title.
Like most podcasts.
Yeah.
I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep. Let me get rid of this. Torgrid 45. And there they are for our names.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. We will catch you in a week's time.
Ante, ecco l'anteante in area di rigore, anteante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo dà buono!